My name's Greg. I'm an addict. Hey, gang. How's it going? Yeah. When I talk, I like to start with another moment of silence. So if you will. Thank you, God. I really appreciate the opportunity to stand up here in front of you and get honest and let you know who I am. And let me hear what I have to say, because it's always interesting. I never know what's going to come out. I can barely see out there, but everywhere I went today, or in yesterday, someone's been complaining about getting a ticket on the way down here. Could everybody who got a ticket stand up? I swear I've talked to 10 or 15 people who had the same situation. Somewhere around Salisbury or something, right? Yeah. Anyway, I'm real grateful to be here. The last C&P convention I was at, I think, was in Bethesda in 89. Somebody had asked me on the way in whether or not I'd been to C&P since it came to Ocean City. And the reality is I don't have a clue. I'm really not sure. I don't think so. I don't remember this facility. I've had an opportunity, and one of my great joys is I get to travel around and speak at conventions and get to learn, meet people and get to go places, and it's such a joy. I came to Narcotics Anonymous when we were a very, very small fledgling fellowship. Maybe 200 members. Maybe 20 groups. And I have had the great good fortune of getting to watch NA grow. And to me, to see a room like this, and I've spoken before groups this large a number of times, is just mind-boggling. To think that we came from a place where we were just barely making it to this in what seems like a very short period of time just blows me away. There's a lot of things, as I grow in my own recovery, there are a lot of things in that kind of category of just blow me away. I was talking to a guy today or yesterday, and we were talking about our birthdays. Our belly button birthdays are pretty close together. I just celebrated 51 years live a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, it's an accomplishment for us, isn't it? That every year is another accomplishment. And his birthday is the day after mine. My birthday was March 13th. His was March 14th. And this whole aging process is a trip. I'll tell you. I don't know. I don't know what to think, but I'm still trying to figure out what it means to be an adult. And here I am, you know. And it's just strange. It's just really strange. And I wasn't prepared for this. I like most good dope fiends, I went out there and ran as hard as I could. And didn't expect to slow down ever. But here I am in Narcotics Anonymous 27 years down the road going, okay, how'd I get here and what do I do now? And, you know, my problems have gotten real simple and the answers have gotten real simple. You know, I only have one problem. I'm powerless over my addiction. My life's become unmanageable. That's the problem. I don't have to figure much out beyond that. The answer is always the same. Well, the bottom line is always the same. The bottom line is, you know, either God's working in my life or God isn't working in my life. And if God's not working in my life, I'm fucked. The answer is always the same. I get people who call me on the phone and it's gotten easier and easier to help them. When they come and say, Greg, I got to talk to you, or something like that, because the answer's always the same. Sooner or later, you got to work a third step. You know. And, you know, we have to make that decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. There's been a lot of discussion and talk about the guides, the step writing guides, and this guide, and sponsee worksheets, and you think you should. Someone has asked me whether you think a person, before they get to the first step, should they work on this or should they work on that or should they do this? And I don't know that there's a a special magic formula. There ain't a secret formula for recovery. There is no substitute for surrender. There is nothing that you can do, no guide you can write, no therapist you can see, no special retreat you can go to, no relationship you can get into, no sponsorship family you can join, which will eliminate your need to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. If you're like me, you've probably spent and continue to spend a tremendous amount of time trying to find a way to avoid surrender. Anything but that. And it's crazy because my experience has told me when I surrender, things work out 100% of the time. They always work out just fine. If I get out of the way, things turn out fine. And yet every time I'm faced with a dilemma, my initial reaction is, hold on, God, I can take care of this one. This one's mine. You know, I reserve it for me. I have a reservation. I reserve, God, I'm going to take care of this one. You don't have to get involved. Things will turn out much better if I do it myself. That way I'll get what I want. And it never works. And then somewhere down the road, I'm going, okay, God, please. It's kind of like one of the things I've said a lot of times when I talk that I still believe is you don't have to work the steps. Anybody here procrastinating on a step? Raise your hand. Look around the room. Hold your hands up. About a quarter or about a third of the people in this room are procrastinating on a step right now. And that means that probably somewhere over half are actually procrastinating on a step. And it's okay because you know what? You don't have to work the steps to stay clean. As long as you can stand it. I don't want to write an inventory. Okay, don't write one. Don't write an inventory. We're entitled to our misery. You know, I don't want to make amends. Don't make amends. I don't want to. I don't want to. Okay, you don't have to. This is not a got-to program. You don't got to do none of that shit. It's not, you don't got to stay clean. You don't got to survive. This is a get-to program. This is not a got-to program. It's a get-to program. We get to work the steps. We get to write inventories. We get to make amends. We get to do the things this program teaches us. We don't have to. And if you don't believe that the active application of spiritual principles is a great gift, then don't do it. As long as you can stand it, but don't use. You know, I had a handy dandy one-step program when it came around Narcotics Anonymous. You do what you got to do to stay clean no matter what, even if your ass falls off. That was my program, and that's what I did. And so my early recovery was tied into substitution. I did what I had to do to stay clean. Anything to keep from thinking about that stuff. Let me back up a hair and tell you about how I got to Narcotics Anonymous. It's really boring, and I'll try to be as quick as I can. Most of our stories coming in here are really boring. We all do pretty much the same stuff. We all feel pretty much the same way. I started using when I was a kid. For me, it was prescription pills, and I loved them. And I started cheating on the medication right away. I got into high school, and I found out there were other drugs, and I went, wow, this is great! You know, I got out of high school and went to college, and played football, and got hurt, came back, went to a different college, and I found out there were other drugs, and went, wow, this is great! You know, flunked out of college because the drugs were so great. And, you know, got involved with some other drugs and I went, wow, this is great. And then it wasn't great anymore. And I got tired. And I got burned out. And I lost my dreams. And I lost my hope. And I lost my spirit. And there was a series of events that took place my last year that brought me to Narcotics Anonymous. They involved giving up a child for adoption. And I had to face the reality that I couldn't promise to be around to help raise that child. And it tore me out, my heart out. It tore me up inside. Because I wanted that child real bad. Some of the other things that happened that last year was my grandmother died. She was one of us. She took too many reds one night and slipped and fell and scalded to death in the shower. Yeah, death by addiction. You know, I say that when I talk a lot of times because we don't look at things in those terms. We don't look at things in terms of death by addiction and how they call them other things like heart attack or car wreck or gunshot or asphyxiation or whatever it happens to be. But how often are they really death by addiction? And you know what? Addiction's about dying. It's about insanity and about dying. It's not about living. You know? And I lived there. We all were there. Some of the other stuff. Well, after my grandmother died, there was this house full of furniture. My grandfather moved in with my mom, and there was this leftover furniture. And so I asked this gal that she and I had given up a child to marry me, and we got married, and we're still married. We'll be celebrating our 28th wedding anniversary in June. We got married for all the wrong reasons. She was one of those last links to sanity that we grasped at towards the tail end of our using. I figured that might help. I tried a few other things like counseling and church and things like that. And the reality was I kept using. I didn't stop for any of those reasons. But Lois and I have a new relationship, and it's grown over the years. And we really like each other. We're getting to the point. We got two more kids, by the way. I have a son who is in college, entering his senior year of college in the fall. And I've got a 16-year-old daughter. And you know what? We have a good life. We like each other. We like our kids part of the time. We like our kids most of the time. Sometimes we don't like them, we just love them. But if any of you are parents, you know about that, huh? I like raising kids. One of my great disappointments was I have all these fantasies about what would happen if, you know, something were happening to Lois and the kids, and I have all these fantasies about all the wonderful things that I do, but the reality is I probably try to replicate what I have pretty much. Because I feel very, very comfortable in my life. I feel comfortable being Greg, and that's bizarre, because that was never okay to be me. As I went on that last year, just before we got married, my best friend, one of my two remaining friends, hung himself and left a note that said, "I just can't think anymore." And you know what? That had some meaning to me. Because I remember not being able to put together a sentence. I remember being so loaded I couldn't function as a human being. I could remember when nothing seemed real anymore. I could remember when, and I'm an old California boy, I can remember when the most real thing in the world was waking up or having stayed up all night or tripped all night or something like that. Being at the beach and walking on the cold sand, and that was the only real thing I could identify that week, that the sand felt good between my toes and cold, and it was real. I knew that was real. And that's where I come from too. Sometime in the summer of 1970, I don't know exactly when, I found myself sitting backwards on a toilet like many of us so often did. Sick, couldn't get off, dripping blood on the floor, going, "God damn, look what's become of me. Look at me. This is not the way it was supposed to turn out." And I felt that heart sickness. I felt that desperation. I felt that emptiness and loneliness that I don't know if anybody else feels the same way I hear us sharing about feeling. Because I realized that I'd lost my dreams, that I'd lost my spirit, that perhaps, you know, I'd lost everything of importance to me. And I was dead inside. I was tired. I was all used up. I felt all used up. And I started looking for help at that point. What I found out was that in California in 1970, there was no place to go. I tried Synanon. They wouldn't take me because I didn't have a police record. I couldn't find any help for an addict. And by that time, I don't know if I would have called myself an addict, but I would have copped to having a problem. Because I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop using. I went one of those hokey-dokies with for the connection. The connection promised, and shows you how, let me tell you how slick I was out there using. About 9 months before I finally cleaned up, I went to the connection. I said, I got to do something. It's all coming apart. And they promised to find me some dollies, some dolopine, which is like an early form of methadone, to help kick. And I believed them. I believed the connection was actually going to get me something to go help kick my habit. So I don't know. But 9 months later, I ended up kicking a habit. You know, the dolopine was never there. Not from that source, anyway. But anyway, I found myself looking for help and not being able to find any. And I got to the point where I was calling the various things you hear at 3 o'clock in the morning on what used to be the radio, and there's public service announcements. And I think what I finally ended up calling was a suicide line. And they said, are you eligible for Narcotics Anonymous? And I don't know. What do you got to be? And I share this when I talk pretty regularly too, because this is where it was like when I came around. They didn't know about Narcotics Anonymous. I'd never heard about Narcotics Anonymous. They just had this phone number and figured I might be a candidate. So I called Narcotics Anonymous you know, the guy said that I talked to, who later, coincidentally, became my first sponsor. I didn't know that he'd taken my call when I asked him to sponsor me. Strange world, isn't it? Isn't it funny how that happens so often? Things like that. But anyway, he said, well, why don't you come to a meeting? And, you know, I was too sick. Meeting was too far from home. I had all these excuses not to go to that meeting. And then he said there was a meeting close to where I lived on Thursday night. It was only about 20 miles away instead of 50 miles away. And I promised I'd go to that meeting because I didn't want to talk to him anymore by that point. And I promised. And I was a good promise. We got any good promisers here? Yeah, you know, I'll promise you anything. Yeah? Promise, 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 promise. Follow through is a little shaky, but the promises are good. Yeah, I can promise. Anyway, I promised him I'd go to that meeting. And you know, I went. And that was bizarre. I got all dressed up. I bathed. That was strange, too. You know, that was not a regular custom of mine. But I went to this meeting. It was on a Thursday night early in October of 1970. The meeting was in a church on the corner of Yucca and Gower in Hollywood, California. And you walked down a flight of steps to the meeting hall. There was a little square of tables, and there were perhaps 20 people in the meeting. And I remember that, but that's about all I remember about that first meeting. I do remember being called on, but I have no idea what I said. I probably said something like, my name's Lauren, because I mumbled a lot in those days. And, I didn't communicate real well. I've got a buddy that talks about needing an interpreter to go to the 7-Eleven. I wasn't in that kind of situation, but, you know, I'm the guy who sat in the corner mumbling and never made any sense to anybody. But I made it to that meeting, and I heard something at that meeting, and I remember someone saying, you never have to use again against your will. How many of you heard that early on? Yeah, we used to say that a lot. And you know what? It meant something to me. How many of you have heard that saying ever before tonight? Most of us, right? Does it mean something to you? Yeah. It means something to addicts because we're the ones who know about using against our will. These lame lops don't know about using against their will. If you identify with that statement, there's very little question that you're an addict, right? I mean, think about us. We get so caught up into this thing about whether or not we're addicts. It seems like most of us, whether we come in, whatever door we come in through, one of the first things we try to do is disqualify ourselves. We try to find excuses why we might not qualify for Narcotics Anonymous, why we might really not need to stop using, why you know, we're different. And the reality is only an addict would wonder about whether or not they qualify for Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. If you're struggling with whether or not you're an addict right now, forget it. If you're struggling with it, you're an addict. Non-addicts don't struggle with that. If you got to make excuses to the people around you in meetings why you're not an addict, forget it. You're an addict. My wife's not an addict. Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand that part of her. I don't understand why it's no big deal for her to not use nothing. I don't understand. We just had a roll call, not a roll call, but a clean time countdown. How many of you are proud of your clean time? Yeah! Most normies don't give a shit how long they've been clean. They don't even know. You know your clean date? Yeah! Do you think my wife knows the last time she had a glass of wine with my mom or something like that? She doesn't have a clue what year it was. I know to the moment. I know what time of day it was. I know the circumstances, you know. But only an addict would remember that sort of stuff. You know, we're the type of people for whom staying clean is a big deal. Yeah, and it is a big deal. Because we can't survive any other way, but only an addict. So if you're struggling with whether or not you're an addict, on one hand, that qualifies you for Narcotics Anonymous. On the other hand, it's really irrelevant, because if you're not an addict, staying clean is going to be easy. We get caught in this, into this mental masturbation of, well, why shouldn't I? You know. I can do this and I can do that. We get all these rationalizations about why we might not be addicts, why we might be able to use. And you know, the other side of why shouldn't I is why should I? Why should I go out there and overdose on a chemical to alter my perception of reality? Huh? Are there any good reasons to do that? No, there isn't. It doesn't make sense. It's kind of like going out and, you know, sticking your hand on the stove, going, ah! And then you're going, wow, that was good. I think I'll do that again. You know. Or taking somebody out, getting loaded, and getting into a romantic situation and end up going, ah, I love you, throwing up all over. You know. We do those sorts of things and then we do it again. And we do it again, and we do it again. And part of what brought me to Narcotics Anonymous was I felt like I'd done everything twice or three times and was all used up. I didn't have more chances out there. Anyway, I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I started going to meetings, and I listened to what people said. I tried to disqualify myself based on never having been busted. I didn't look at the similarities, and where I found identification was in here. When you talked about the loneliness, I knew what you were talking about. When you talked about the hopelessness, I knew what you were talking about. When you talked about the fear, I knew what you were talking about. When you talked about being sick and tired, I knew what you talked about. When you talked about what it meant to be compelled to use, even if you didn't want to, I knew what you talked about. When you talked about making the promise to somebody that you were going to change and then finding yourself doing the same things, I knew what you were talking about because I'd lived there. And that's what got me to Narcotics Anonymous. Growing up's been a bitch. And I did something this past week. One of the neat things about talking is I get to bring people up to date on my life. I did something this past month that I don't understand. I interviewed for a job that I really wanted in North Carolina. I live in Tennessee. And I got the job. And it was a really good job. It was a fairly decent increase in salary. And I ended up turning it down. Because I couldn't figure out how to do that without being selfish and self-centered and hurting my family. Because it would have required a geographic move. It would have required us to relocate. I tried to scheme a way to not relocate and do the job. It's about 115 miles away. But, you know, there's no way I could have commuted that on a regular basis. So we would have ended up having to move. And I was thinking about my family, and, you know, my daughter just got into high school, and she's experiencing the first success in school she's ever really had. And you know what? I can't take that away from her. And I had to check myself out, because that's not like Greg. Usually I am so self-centered that I'll go ahead and do things, and my family will have to adapt to what I want. Usually I will proceed with my life as the decisive factor and only take their feelings into consideration. And I didn't have to do that this time. And it amazes me. Gosh, that's something I've prayed for. I've prayed not to be so caught up in Greg that I did things to harm my family. I've prayed to have that kind of freedom. And you know what? It feels good to have had the freedom to say, you know what? I'm going to pass on this one, even though I want it. Even though I want it, I don't have to go there because that's not what's best for us. My family is kind of a we program today. It's bizarre. You know, I don't understand it. But it's growth. But it's change. But it's better than it's ever been. I believe in the disease concept. I look at a lot of things in my life and in recovery in terms of physical, mental, and spiritual. When I stand up here and say, my name's Greg, and I'm an addict, it means very basically that somehow, some way, my body reacts when I put any one of a large family of chemicals into it. And I don't have any control over that. I don't have the ability to turn that off or turn it on or make it unhappen. I don't have the ability to control that. It also means that I have a tendency to get strung out on anything. I can get strung out at the drop of a hat. Just give me something to focus on that turns me on. I don't care if it's a job or a hobby or archives or NA or whatever. I'll get strung out on it to the point where it becomes self-destructive. And I have that when I say that I'm an addict, it means that I have that immature thing about lack of faith, lack of hope, lack of trust, inability to relate to others as equals, self-obsession, you know, low self-esteem, all those things that fall into the category of the spiritual illness. That's what it means when I say my name's Greg and I'm an addict. You know, that's my problem. And one of the things I said when I started tonight was that the problem is always that I'm an addict and my life has become unmanageable. And it boils down to that so often. You know, I try to think of what was the problem in my life. What is the last serious problem out of my life? It had to do with a job that I have that I don't particularly like and the hope of getting a new one. I just shared that with you. The problem is that I'm an addict and I've got all that addictive stuff going. And the answer is my higher power. The answer is God. I've gone through a change in the way I look at the steps of the last few years. The second step in particular, I started looking at this idea of sanity. And I don't know how we got there, but we seem to have fallen in a pattern, and I fell right into it, where I check the second step out and rubber stamp it and keep on trucking. And then recite the formula for the third step, thinking I'd work the second step. I don't believe that's true. What I did come after a period of time, what I did come to learn and did come to believe was that a power greater than myself, that must be this God they're talking about, right? Can restore me to sanity. And that the craziest thing I ever did was that involved with my using. So the second step ultimately meant that God could fix my addiction. And that may be true, but I don't think that's what the second step says any longer. And I had to look about this idea of sanity, and I don't know about sanity. It's something I didn't have a lot of experience with. I spent my life trying to distort reality, running away from my feelings, running away from my environment, running away from all this stuff that was going on inside of me. So I didn't know much about sanity. What is sanity? What I came up with was the simple definition that, you know, we've used for years and years and years. A person who is sane is a person who's in touch with reality, who's living in harmony with the world, with reality. And a person who's insane is a person who's out of touch with reality, who's living life like fingernails on a blackboard. You know. And ultimately, I believe reality is God, is spiritual principles. And my second step has evolved to mean, for me, I come to believe that a power greater than myself, a set of principles written so simply we can follow them in our daily lives, spiritual principles, this program can restore my relationship with reality, can restore my relationship with God, the universe, all that around me, can restore my spirituality. That realization, moving God from the center of the second step to the end of the second step, has made a radical change in the way I look at the rest of the steps. It's really impacted my program very, very strongly, because the third step, instead of being a commitment to work the rest of the steps, is really for me today a commitment to live life. As if I really believed God was going to take care of me. You know, and I don't know about that. And I told you that my initial reaction to most of those things is I can handle it, is to deny that. The third step is still the hardest thing I have to do, particularly when I'm caught in insanity. Our book says insanity is repeating the same mistakes, expecting different results. It's also repeating the same mistakes, knowing what the results are going to be and doing it anyway. It's also trying to fix what's going on inside of me with the stuff outside. It's going for that hokey doke, going for the shortcut. There is no substitute for surrender. And that's a big theme for me. I've looked. I've struggled. I've spent an inordinate amount of energy trying to find a way to avoid surrendering, and it just isn't any. There is no substitute for surrender. Eventually, I have to come to a point where I'm going, okay, God, I give up. Okay, God, I'm just going with what you give me, and it's going to be okay. And if I can believe strongly enough in that, I don't have to worry about all the BS that life throws at me. And over the course of my recovery, there's been some real difficult times. One of the most difficult occurred about 3 years ago. I found my son laying on the floor of his room one Saturday morning, thrashing in a coma. He had viral meningitis. And he lost 3 days of his life. And I was afraid. And I didn't know what to do. And I couldn't fix him. It was one of those deals where reality proved my life had become unmanageable. I couldn't fix him. And it was a tough time for me, but I had to let go. You know, I had to turn him over to the care of a loving God, and he's fine. Another difficult time in my recovery that some of you shared with me was getting ripped off for, you know, basically everything we had, getting defrauded and losing everything and ending up homeless with 20 years clean and a family. Being homeless was okay when I was 20 years old, using, running the streets. Being a homeless at 20 years clean with a family wasn't okay. Because I hated myself. My self-esteem dropped. You know, and I had to struggle to be okay with me. I had to struggle to maintain my relationship with my higher power. And you know, the struggle part is kind of crazy too. Struggling to maintain a relationship with a higher power. And higher power is right here all the time. It's me who's struggling with me. I'm really a strong believer that God exists in all things. And it's up to me to be aware of that. And when I could be aware of that, things turn out fine. When I'm unaware of the presence of God, I get the dilemma where I go to a meeting and I don't hear anything because I'm not listening. I get the dilemma where I go through life and I'm given opportunities and I'm blind to them. I go through day-to-day living, getting God's grace, turning my back on it because I'm not willing to be open-minded. Because I'm not willing to be open to God's grace. So it's changed my program. My third step is a commitment to live life as if I believed that a power greater than myself was taking care of me, that God was taking care of me. The fourth step, instead of being show and tell, instead of being an assessment of the unmanageability of my life, has become an assessment of my morality. What's morals? My rules for living. My belief system, what I think is right and wrong. And once I can get in terms with that, I can start living that way. I don't have to continue to live in that self-violation that we find ourselves caught in. And fifth step, you know, it says we admit to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And that admission changes. It's kind of like when we talk about the first step, most of us don't have much trouble with the idea that when we admit that we're powerless over our addiction, we're really admitting to our innermost self, right? Really owning way down deep that we're powerless over our addiction. Most of us pick that up. Realize that it doesn't mean going to a meeting and saying, my name's Greg and I'm an addict, therefore I've worked the first step, just because I said that. But somehow we don't see the same thing for the fifth step, where we say, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And I believe that admission in the fifth step, we should look at it the same way as we do the admission in the first step. That first and foremost, the person who has to know the exact nature of my wrongs is me. And I have to own that. And I have to be aware of that. And like, and in the same way in the tenth step, when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. I think it's more important for me to know when I'm wrong and admit it to myself and own that I've deviated from the spiritual path than it is for me to go to someone necessarily and say, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was wrong. When I can accept in me that I am wrong, that I need to change, then I have a chance to do something about it. As long as I'm just doing it ritualistically, externally, there's no internal change. The sixth and seventh step have become, instead of a rote, I don't really understand this sort of stuff, they've come to have great meaning in the preparation to humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings has become very, very special to me. Now, this is how I change. This is how I grow. This is how I get healing in my life. It's almost like in the seventh step I ask, okay, God, take care of this. And God's answer is, no sweat. Got you covered. We're going to take care of the past by giving you the eighth and ninth step. We're going to make a list of the people you'd harm. And you're going to become willing to make amends to them. And in that way, I can free myself from the past. And my first amends I put off for years because it was about them. And I was afraid of how they would react. And what I've come to believe in is that the amends are about me. This is a self-help program. I said, we don't have to make amends. We get to make amends. By making amends, I free myself of guilt, shame, and remorse from the past. And I am able to start mending my relationship or continue mending my relationship with the Spirit. When I can make an honest amends for my past, I get results automatically. I get results automatically because I begin to forgive myself. And I believe those steps are first and foremost about self-forgiveness. God goes on to say, well, we got the present covered too. We'll give you this 10th step. Keep track of how you're doing in your life. And when you start getting off course, adjust. When you start finding yourself heading down the wrong path, call your sponsor. Go to a meeting. Do the things the program teaches you to do to get back on track spiritually. And it also gives us the 11th step, which takes care of the future. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge and for His will for us and the power to carry that out. You know. Seeking knowledge and power. Praying for knowledge and power. You know. Staying on track. Taking care of the future. Finding out what God's will is for us. So we can follow that path. So our direction is spiritually based rather than selfishly based. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and it ties right back into 2. If this process is going to restore my spirituality, my sanity, then the statement in the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening, takes on a different meaning. We try to carry this message to addicts, and what's the message? What's the message of Narcotics Anonymous? Hope, freedom is what we usually say. We're the message of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, the praying we do, for me primarily, in the 3rd, 7th, and 11th steps, is about living. It's like a man who was my sponsor for many years gave me something that I like to share. And it came out of a book, and I wish I know what the book was, but it said, the greatest prayer someone can offer to a God of any kind is the way they live. And I believe the way we live is a form of prayer. Yeah. How are you living? I mean, we're told that we get what we come for. What are you here for? Has your participation in this convention been a prayer that you're proud of? Yeah. What are you here for? You know, I think that's one of the biggest mistakes we make. We come in here and we buy into that thing, as long as you stay clean, you can do anything you damn please. Not true. Not true. Think about the way your life is. Think about your prayer. And if you're uncomfortable with your prayer, the prayer that your life is, then I suspect you should change the way you live. It's called reciprocity. The way you live determines the way you live. The greatest prayer someone can offer to a God of any kind is the way they live. You know, scared the shit out of me when I first thought about that. Because I wasn't real thrilled about some of the dishonesty in my life. I wasn't thrilled about the fact that I was still stealing. I wasn't thrilled about the fact that I'd lie to you in a heartbeat. I wasn't thrilled about, you know, some of the things that I was doing in my life, some of the dishonesty and negativity that I clung to. You know, and I had to change. You know, it distressed me to think that my action, my behavior was a prayer. You know, today I try to live by principle. That's the good part. It's easy to have a positive prayer by living by principle, by letting go of the negativity, by being the person I really want to be. Who do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know. I know I want to be closer to God. I know I want to be okay with Greg. I know I want to have a life that seems to be free of the insanity and the negativity that I once lived in. I know I don't want to go back to where I came from. I want to be free. I want to be happy.
You know, I used to say, I want to feel good. Yeah. But the reality is, I just want to feel okay. Feeling good, I'd given up on a couple of years before I stopped using. I just wanted to feel okay. And it didn't feel okay. Having a hang of the spiritual awakening as a result of this step, we tried to carry the message, our lives, to addicts. One of the greatest gifts I can do is to let you into my life. To let you know how I'm doing. To let you know about my successes and failures. To let you know about the fear. To let you know about the struggles. To let you know about the joys. To let you know about the awesome nature of recovery. You know, to share with you what it feels like, you know, intimately, to enter into this thing we call, and I don't even know, empathy. This is like this, when you got somebody off to the side and you guys are really talking and all the barriers go away and we experience anonymity. That wonderful feeling when there's nothing in between us, where age disappears and race disappears and sex disappears and money disappears and all those things we use to separate ourselves from each other, they disappear and we really get to touch spirits, that joy. I mean, that's what this is all about. It's about letting go of all that shit. And being able to touch spirit. And being able to love one another. And love is a weird thing. I didn't know the first thing about it. When we did the reading, somebody did, you know, there's one thing more than anything else. Several people chimed out with, you know, relationships. You know, I don't go for it. Obsession, yeah. Maybe. It says attitude, yeah. But relationships, you know, we don't do that good. We don't come to Narcotics Anonymous because we're healthy in that department. I mean, no one gets Narcotics Anonymous because things are going good in their life. It's go to hell and turn left. Well, here we are. I do believe in having relationships, and it has nothing to do with sex. I came to Narcotics Anonymous married. I'm still married to that person. Our relationship has changed, or we wouldn't be married. But the reality is I had a relationship from day one, if you're talking about a partner. But those aren't the relationships that I found here. That's not the relationships that this is about. The relationships that this is about are a set that I've talked about a lot of times that I think are really, really important. The first one is honesty. We got to get honest. We got to, first of all, to ourselves. Cash register honesty. Don't lie, cheat, and steal. But even more than that, letting you in. Letting go of that. If you knew what I was like way down deep inside, you'd have to reject me. Risking your rejection. Because unless I can do that, I will never ever believe that you accept me. Unless I risk your rejection, I will never ever believe that you can accept me. Getting honest. Letting you into my life. One of the ways I practice, you know, the tradition that says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using, it ain't that you can be part of my family just because you want to get clean. It is that I let you into my life and open my home to you at times and share with you as an equal and sit down and be real with you. That's the application of that for me in my daily living, is that I let you into my life, that my life is open to you, to others. And it's a wonderful feeling. You know, the second relationship that I talk about when I talk about this set of relationships, you know, is fellowship. Becoming a part of, for the first time, most of us, really feeling like a part of. I never felt like I belonged anywhere. The best analogy I've heard someone share from the podium is talking about standing on the fence, watching the kids in the playground, talking bad about them, but wishing he could be in there. I identified with that. I never did that exactly, but I felt that way. I always felt different. I never felt like I belonged with the normies. I never felt like I belonged with the people I was getting loaded with. I always felt like I didn't belong. And you know what? I belong here. I feel like I belong here. I could experience those things that I shared about getting real with each other and touching spirit and belonging together. It's a wonderful, wonderful. That's sort of the great payoff of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, the third relationship that I talk about when I talk about a set of relationships is sponsorship. I believe in sponsorship. If you don't have a sponsor, sooner or later you'll be in trouble without one. Because you're prejudiced about you and you're incapable of being objective. If you're looking for just the right sponsor, you're in trouble because there is no such animal. There is no one in Narcotics Anonymous who's free of defects of character. And if you hang out with someone long enough, their defects are going to shine on you. Forgive them and get over it. Find someone who lives the way you would like to live most of the time. You know, you can pick them to death and never get a sponsor. Because no one will ever measure up to our fantasies. Because no one ever measures up, you know, to our obsession. You know, the fourth relationship I talk about is integrity. Strict adherence to a moral code. And that's what the part of the message is here tonight. Hey, just live this way. You know, our program is a set of principles written so simply we can follow them in our daily life. Our program is a moral code. If you live this way, the results are guaranteed. My sponsor has said many times that you don't have to believe in Narcotics Anonymous. You take this program the same way you take castor oil. If you take enough of that stuff, the results are automatic. You don't have to believe in it. If you live this way, the results are automatic. Freedom. You know, positive spiritual life. Growth. Finding a higher power. Self-forgiveness. Being okay with who you are. Being able to love for a change. You know, our using was like the opposite of love. You know, we have this thing when our whole life of thinking is centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. Where is there room for love in that? There was no room for love except when I was loaded. And then everything was so distorted that it wasn't love anyway. It was maybe obsession at best. You know, we didn't know the first thing about love. And the fifth relationship I like to talk about in that set is spirituality. And I believe that recovery is all about spirituality. That's what we're doing here. Once we get clean, this is about growing up spiritually. This is about becoming more spiritually centered. It's about getting closer to God. It's about having had a spiritual awakening. It's about improving our conscious contact. It's about getting rid of the things from our past that inhibit spiritual growth. It's about changing our behavior so we don't have to pick up more karmic garbage. It's about changing from a taker to a giver. It's about changing from a hater to a lover. It's about changing from someone who lives life based on what's in it for them to someone who cares. To someone who is capable of loving another human being. That's what this is about once we get clean. If you're focused on getting clean and that's all there is, that's where it starts, but that's not all that there is. You know, we need to quit talking about, you know, getting clean. We need to be clean. And we need to focus on that when we first come around. But we need to start talking more about growing spiritually. We need to start talking more about stopping doing those things we use to abuse and harm each other through our self-gratification. We need to stop taking advantage of each other and dope fiending each other. We need to stop living on the edge. We need to back off and start living like a real person. Like our prayer was real. Like our life was a prayer, like I said before. How's your life? How's your relationships with people? Can you be honest with them? Can you be real with them? It's one thing to trust yourself to another human being in bed. It's something else to trust another human being driving your car, or being a passenger with them. That was tough for most of us in the beginning. Being a passenger was hard. But to trust someone with your secrets, to trust someone not to hurt you even though they know they can, not to push your buttons, to allow ourselves to be vulnerable to each other, that's tough. That's really, really hard. But that's where we need to go. If you don't know what to do next in your program, it's okay. Do the next right thing. The answer is always going to be make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand it. And get out of the way to the best you can. The answer is always going to be in the application of spiritual principles. The answer is always going to be embrace life, live by principle, love, care, cherish. Treat each other as if we were all part of God. That's always going to be the answer. No. Treat each other as if we were all manifestations of God. That's the way I define respect. You know. And I asked that question earlier. What does it mean to be an adult? And you know, maybe to be an adult, and I wrote this in a letter to my son, is to start taking responsibility for who we are. For our lives. For our recovery. That and respecting the world around us. Finding God in all things around us and treating all things around us with that respect. And the way we're treated like an adult perhaps relates directly to how well we can do those things. How well we can take responsibility for our life and our recovery. And how well we can respect the world around us. Maybe that's what it means to be an adult. I'll let you know when I find out, huh? Yeah, I'll let you know when I find out. But, you know, there's something there for me. I have the great good fortune of being okay with me today. If there's one thing this program has given me, perhaps more important than anything else, is it's given me Greg back. It's all right for me to be me. It's all right for me to have my shortcomings. It's all right for me to be fat. It's all right for me to be 51 and gray and lost my teeth and losing my eyes. Because it's okay for me to be me and I don't have to run away from Greg anymore. You taught me that. And I know that's where we all come from. You know, we talk about cherishing and loving each other. Maybe just as important as learning how to cherish and love ourselves. Embrace yourself. Embrace ourselves in the Spirit. Love one another, and in loving one another, love ourselves. Treat each other with respect. Treat the world around us with respect. Treat reality with respect. And try to make your life that perfect prayer. That's what I want to be when I grow up. That's what I want to do when I mature into a real adult. And I can let go of some of these games. Reach out to each other. Conventions are about reaching out to each other. They're about touching spirits. They're about getting charged up with recovery. They're about loving one another. They're not about abusing one another. Love one another. Embrace yourself. And embrace the Spirit. Thank you.